are listening to Tailgate Talk with Patrick Surtain and Aronde Gadsden, exclusively at DolphinsTalk.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Oliva.
And welcome to another episode of Tailgate Talk with Patrick Surtain and Aronde Gadsden. Guys, how are you doing today?
All right, man, as usual, hanging in there.
Just finishing up practice, ready to go.
All right, so let's get right into it. The Miami Dolphins this week announced that they're going back to Ryan Fitzpatrick as their starting quarterback. They gave Josh Rosen about 3 weeks. They put Rosen on the bench against Washington there late in the game. Fitzpatrick's led a couple touchdown drives. What do you think about this, and is this the right move to make? Let's start with you, Aronde. Is this the right move to make, and what does it do to an offense when you go back and forth between two quarterbacks like this?
Well, you know, I was champion Ryan Fitzpatrick from the start. I thought he should have been the starter. I just think he gives us that veteran leadership, some moxie in the pocket, and he knows what he's doing. It's tough for an offense to get any continuity when you change quarterbacks like that, but in the position we are at this point, we're just looking for a spark to come in. He sparked us last week, and, you know, he knows how to prepare. He was ready. It wasn't no big deal to him. He's been around the block a few times. He knows how this works, and I think we'll do better than we did the last few weeks. Maybe if he was in a few of those games, we could have pulled him out. But you never can tell. Josh Rosen needed his shot. He's a young cat. And like I said, I'm a Ryan Fitzmagic fan, and I'm happy to see him back on the center.
Pat?
Yeah, you know what they say, man. If you have two quarterbacks, you really don't have one. And like OG said, it's hard to develop some continuity, but for what the direction that the Dolphins are trying to go in, my whole thinking is, why not play the young guy? You know Ryan Fitzpatrick is on a one-year deal. You're probably going to let him loose because you have a high draft pick and you're going to take a quarterback. Why not let the young guy go, a guy who has some value to him so you can get some form? And, you know, he needs games and opportunities to play. You know, obviously, he made a couple of mistakes, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is just what he was. He was a spark. You know, can he do that for the whole game? You know, anybody, the most famous guy on the football team is a backup quarterback until he becomes a starter. And obviously, it's been going both ways with those guys. So, you know, who knows, man? I know it's going to be hard to win up there in Buffalo no matter who they play. So I just think – because I remember earlier in the week they said that they were going with Josh Rosen. Then it changed all of a sudden. I don't know if it was an injury or something, but I guess the coaches feel like he's going to give them the best opportunity to win this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because they said the week prior to the Redskins game, Josh Rosen was going to be the guy for the rest of the season. And then after the Redskins game, when Flores was talking to the media, he said, once again, Josh Rosen's my guy. And it's just a curious move because they traded for Rosen. You give him 3 weeks. And I know it was a rough game, but you want to almost see how he responds from that rough game. You want to see what the kid's made of and see how he would have, you know, rebounded maybe this week against the Bills. And he's so young, he might be the future. You don't know. But to put him back on the bench, I don't know. It's like, why'd they make the trade for him if they're really not going to give him a shot here? And, you know, Fitzpatrick weeks 1 and 2 did not look good at all. I know he looked okay last week against the Redskins. Week 1 and 2, he did not look good.
Yeah.
Maybe a confidence thing. I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's always better when somebody shows you the way to go. I think,
yeah, maybe.
You know, Rosen played the first three quarters and then what I got to lose at this point. So they brought in. So maybe it'd be, you know, the opposite. Maybe Fitzpatrick could go in there and play bad three quarters and then Rosen would come in.
Got to
try something at this point.
You got to mix it up. Yeah, got to mix it up. Next topic was at the end of the Redskins game, Miami scores late with time running out. They could have went for the extra point and maybe sent the game to overtime, although we know the extra points these days is a little bit further back, not like it used to be. Instead, they went for two in the win. I kind of like the call because, again, the way this season has gone, what do you got to lose? If you're trying to win a game, this is probably your best chance. One play, two-point conversion. What was your thoughts on the call and going for the win? Let's start with Pat.
I actually like the call. You know, to do all that work to come back and get within 1 point. You know, why not going? You know, most pundits and experts are predicting this team to go 0-16. You know, who knows what will happen in overtime? But you have one single one moment to win that game, and you know, if you get that 2 point conversion, you win. I just didn't like the play selection. You know, only people who probably complete that play are the Patriots, because they give you a bunch of different eye candy. We just lined up in it, you know, through the ball. When you have a 6'4 Preston Williams one-on-one with Josh Norman, who had just given up the touchdown, you know, confidence probably low. Why not go up and give him a jump ball? I think that's a better percentage than the play they had, because it looked like the Redskins knew the play was coming, because the defensive end, even if Kenyon Drake would have caught the ball, or Ryan Wins, whatever his name is, he would have made the play. Ryan Anderson would have made the play on it. So, love the decision, just don't love the play call. I think, you know, in that situation, give your guy a chance to go up and go, you know, get a 50-50 ball, which he's proven that he's can do throughout the year.
You know, I kind of disagree. I think we should have just kicked the extra point and went into overtime. We at home, and I think on the road you go for two, but at home you kick the extra point and you try to play some defense and hold them to three, and then we come down and score the touchdown. I know that, you know, that's a little, you know, far-fetched, but I think the analytics would tell us to kick the extra point. I just think we'd have a better shot doing it that way, because, you know, it comes out now that they didn't even practice the play. Right?
Yeah, I know.
why would they call the play? And the two guys in there didn't even practice the play. So, you know, hey, we the Dolphins, I think you try to, you, anything can happen, you know, on the kickoff, anything can happen, you know, doing the downs, you kick the ball, you kick the extra point, but I guess they're saying you can miss that too, but I think you kick the extra point, go into overtime, and take your chances. We just trying to win, we just trying to get something going, you know, you keep the fans in the seats, you do a lot of things like that, but I do think we should have kicked the extra point.
Yeah, I think the case for the extra point is that they had all the momentum at the end of the game. So if the game went to overtime, they maybe could have kept that momentum moving forward and maybe won it there. But I'm with Pat on this. I think they were right to try for two, but the play call was bad, especially when they didn't even practice the play all week. I might have just lined it up and tried to run it in. I didn't like the play call either. And like Pat said, when you got some tall wide receivers like they have with Williams and Parker, you know, that's probably your best bet for a pass on that part of the field, I would say. Use those guys as sized to their advantage. But I like the play call. It showed a little bit of guts, and, you know, they just came up short.
Yeah, you know, usually in those situations, you have two or three go-to plays that you've been practicing throughout all mini camp, throughout camp, that you knew have 85-90% probability to work. This play had no chance. You know, why not get them on the edge, give them a run pass option, do something creative. You know, I know they you know, it's the copycat league and they see the Patriots doing that play, but the Patriots give you all kind of stuff on the backside, you know, that allows the work, and they block it up perfectly. Seemed like the Redskins were in their huddle in their headsets and they knew exactly what was coming.
Yeah, that 95% players kicked the extra point.
But this is the Dolphins. We're not talking about regular analytics in football. This is the Dolphins. They need a W. They need some excitement to put the fans back in the stadium. It's like a little league game out there, man.
Let me
fans
tell you.
Have empty. It's just everything. Everybody in the club live watching the football game.
I was
not
at
even
that
watching.
Game.
Listen to music.
I was at that game last week. I was at that game. And in the lower part of the stadium, down low, 100 level, it was at least 65% Redskins fans. It was maroon and gold everywhere. They must have come out of the woodwork for this game or whatever, but it was a lot of Redskins fans, because when they took the lead early there, 17-3 at one point or so, you know, they were making a lot of noise, and it was loud in there, but they were cheering for the Redskins. It was a ton of Redskins fans.
That's how it is. Every road team that comes to Miami.
Yeah, I know.
They take over the stadium.
They take over the stadium, because if you're going to plan one trip a year to watch them play, well, I want to spend a weekend in Miami. It's a nice it's a nice place to go visit, so that's why you get a lot of that, unfortunately. This week, they have to travel up and play the Bills. Playing in Buffalo, never easy. It's a hostile place to play. It's loud. It's always a challenge. At least this time, it probably won't be any snow in October. You guys played a lot of games down there back in the day. What are some of your memories about playing in Buffalo?
Oh man, just my first memory just pulling up to the stadium. They're gonna egg your bus, they're gonna shake your bus, they're gonna piss on your bus. Guys jumping on tables, and then when the football game comes, man, it's first of all, the city is a real dreary place, so there's nowhere to go the night before to go out and eat or anything. You're just in the hotel room, nothing's going on. It's just dark and somber there, and it's just nothing but the Buffalo Bills there. And when you get in the game, man, those guys and the fans, they're nuts. You know, that's besides the Sabres, that's all they have up there. So they're a football town, and they're passionate fans. And they, over the years, they've had some very, very good players. And especially you couple that with the weather. Like you said, it won't be any snow, but it'll be in the 40s.
It'll be windy.
Yeah. In the 40s, windy for guys who play in Miami. That you can almost say it could be in the 10s or the 20s. So weather's right. Definitely going to be a factor. And, you know, their defense is playing lights out, man. They're running the ball with Frank Gore. I heard Devin Singletary is supposed to be back this week. So it's going to be a tough go, and hopefully they bring that A game and at least keep it close to the fourth quarter to try to pull out a win.
Like Pat said, I think the best thing about it, I mean, obviously you're the visitor, but when you come in and you see, you know, old ladies and older people shaking the bus, giving you the bird, they throwing eggs. They brought eggs to the stadium to throw at your bus. That's pretty exciting, even though you're the visitor. But I remember one game, I think we were up by maybe three, and it was a third and eight, and I think Richmond Webb tore his tricep, and they brought in Brent Smith.
Yep.
And during the timeout, they had those Buffaloes running on that on the big screen, and everybody was like, here we go, Buffalo. And, oh, man, when it came back to TV time, needless to say, Bruce Smith sacked Dan Marino, and we lost the game. But, you know, after 4 o'clock, you know, it'll probably be, if it's a 1 o'clock game, probably by that third quarter going into the fourth quarter, it'll start to get a little windy and a little cold. And it's tough to win up there, especially with this new Bills Mafia thing they got going on, the crowd outside. And if I can remember correctly, the fans are pretty close to the field, so they can almost touch you. So it's pretty tough to play in Buffalo. And like Pat said, with their defense playing lights out, man, it's going to be tough for us to win up there. But if we can do a little ball control and bring it down to the end, maybe we can steal one.
Yeah, it's an old stadium that hasn't really been updated, so the fans are right on top of the field, literally right on top of the field. I live about 2.5-3 hours away from there. I've made, I don't even know how many trips to watch you guys play them way back in the 90s, 2000s, even a little bit like in the 80s. Countless times I've gone out there, and almost every time I've left miserable because it's a loss most times. The last time I went, which was the final time until – there's a game that really matters was, I think it was Tannehill's rookie year. They played on a Thursday night up there. And, you know, I got seats that are pretty good. You know, they're not the most expensive, but they're also not way up top either. There's people in my row throwing up because they've been drinking all day. And I'm like, why am I here? This is not fun. I'm watching them lose again. And there are people throwing up in my row.
Tough.
There's fights every 2 seconds.
Oh,
it's
man,
like, I can't go back until there's a game that really matters. And
there's Buffalo fans fighting Buffalo fans.
Yeah, exactly. They're just so drunk they want to punch anybody. They don't even care. That was the one that just, you know, I'm like, I can't go back. And if I do go back, I'm talking to somebody with the Dolphins. I got to sit in the press box like I do when I'm down in Miami because I can't take those fans. It's just awful. It really is.
I know Pat played in Kansas City, so he might have had a colder game, but I think the coldest game I played in was at Buffalo.
I'm sure of it.
-12 or something like that. And then
yeah,
the Ricky Williams
snow swirling. Yeah, I remember that game.
Oh, it's just absolutely awful. Like you said, this week when they play, they'll be facing Frank Gore. Frank Gore obviously spent last year with the Dolphins. Frank Gore's 36 years old. He's still going strong. He's still he had a great year last year in Miami. This year, he's had to start here the past few weeks. And, you know, he's still putting up, you know, solid numbers at 36 years old at running back in a tough position. He is still going strong. What are your thoughts on Frank Gore? And is this guy a Hall of Fame running back? I don't know how he's not, but what are your thoughts on Frank Gore? Let's start with Aronde.
I mean, first of all, I'll say Frank Gore is a Hall of Fame running back. I mean, there's no way he can run and do what he's been doing for the past 10, 12 years. He's a model of consistency, just like all the other running backs that's in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, I thought that was one of the guys we would keep, too. He probably had a low price tag, and he was consistent. He was at home. You know, he'd take care of his body. He'd be a leader in the locker room. You know, but we let him go, and obviously he went to a Division IV, which really sucks. But I'm a Frank Gore fan. I think, you know, he's built for Buffalo.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be the battering ram. He can catch, he can block, and most importantly, he can run the ball. So they're going to have a ball control offense. We've been watching Frank go for quite some time. You know, he's from here. He's a legend down there in Coral Gables. So, you know, like I said at the beginning, I think Frank Gore is a Hall of Famer, and I think we should appreciate what he's doing right now.
Yeah, man, he's definitely a Hall of Famer in my book. You know, every so often you see these guys, you know, kind of go against farther time, and you know, they say a running back they're almost extinct after the age of 30. But Frank is proving us wrong, man. And just looking at record books and to see that he's the third leading rusher of all time, that's unbelievable, man. And just the way he's going, the way he takes care of his body, you know, if he plays another 2 or 3 years, he may be the all-time leading rusher for a guy who you really never hear about. You know, you hear about, of course, Emmitt and Barry Sanders and those guys, some high-profile guys, but this guy has been consistent, you know, from day one. You know, he was injured. He's tough. I remember playing him when he was in San Francisco, and my coach said, "You better tackle this guy because he was running over you." One of the hardest runners I've ever went against. And, you know, we know Frank personally. He's a great dude, man, great player, and he's definitely deserving of being probably a first ballot Hall of Famer when it's all said and done.
Absolutely, and if you want some numbers here that are just truly amazing, look at he's missed almost, like, very few games since 2006. Since 2006, 16 games he played in. 2007, 15 games. 2008, 14. 2009, 14. 2010, 11. Here comes a run, though. 2011 on. 16 games, 16 games, 16 games, 16 games, 16. He hasn't missed a game since last year when he missed one or two since 2011. The guy just shows up every week and plays. And he's on the field literally every week since 2011. And even prior to that, he's only missing one or two games a year. That's amazing in this league. That truly is amazing. At running back.
That's a dinosaur.
Yeah. That's a guy who takes care of himself. And, he's going to Canton when it's all said and done.
Frank must have that good medicinal.
Doing something right.
I have to.
Whatever it is, it's right. It's working for him. Last topic here. Not so much on the Dolphins. Past few weeks in the NFL, we've seen a couple vicious hits. We saw the one on Mason Rudolph there for Pittsburgh. There was the hit by Vontaze Burfict there. Okay. Yeah, where he was suspended for the rest of the year. You know, these hits to the head and neck area can be really, really dangerous. I guess there's two questions I have. One, what can the NFL do? What more can they do to sort of stop that type of stuff and stop those hits? And two, what's being done even at the high school level when you sort of coach up the kids and it comes to tackling and how you sort of teach kids how to tackle?
I'm not sure how much more the NFL can do. Obviously, you know, they're hitting the guys where it hurts, and that's in the pocket. But you know, I know they try to lower the target zone or whatever, but those guys are such phenomenal athletes going at such a high rate of speed, man. It's hard to tell a defender to lower your head and hit a guy in the stomach when that guy is going full speed. Also, you know, the hit on Mason Rudolph by Earl Thomas, you've seen that hit 1,000 times, and guys have gotten right up from it. I just think over the last couple of years, man, guys have, I don't know if it's the equipment, you know, not having those rigorous training camps where you're taking the pounding, but it just seemed like the hits are very minimal, but guys are getting knocked out from it. Now, I can't remember when we played that guys are getting knocked out at such an alarming rate. So, you know, the NFL, they have to do something about that. Like I said, I don't know if it's the equipment or need to get back to doing more in training camp. But, you know, even at our level, man, we practice. We have the heads-up program, which starts from Little League. We rarely tackle in practice, but when we do, we tell a guy to see where he's hit, keep your eyes up, and we even do some rugby tackling. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a contact sport. I don't know if you can limit that 100%. And guys, as a defender, you've been taught your whole life to separate the offensive guy from the ball, and guys are going to go hard, man, and I don't see much that the NFL can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, being the offensive guy, moving the target zone, then that created the first year they did that, then you had ACLs and everybody, you know, and that happening. But there's not much you can do because they've been taught that way. And because of ESPN and all the social media outlets, you know, give a lot of props to people who get the big hits. So kids tend to do that. But, you know, on our level, you send coaches to the camps and the clinics, and we all have to be certified and heads up. We all have to teach the players to have, your head up, see what you hit. You know, they roll the donuts out, and you try to do, you know, like Pat said, a rugby tackle, like an alligator roll or something like that. But at the end of the day, it is a contact sport. When you get out there, it's mano a mano, and you got to protect yourself, and you got to bring the man down. And if that's the best way to do it, you're going to do it, because if you don't do it, the next guy will. So it's going to be tough for the NFL to change it. I mean, they got – you know, a lot of rules in place now, and like I said, being an offensive guy, some of them are tough to see. I mean, you can't make it flag football. It's a contact sport. You're gonna get hit. You know, that's the first thing. Even, you know, I tell my receivers, you know, hey, if you catch it, you're gonna get hit. If you don't catch it, you're gonna get hit. So it's gonna be tough to change that at this point. We have. You know, enough rules and parameters in place to keep players as safe as possible. But at the end of the day, when it's you and another guy in that hole and you got to stop him from crossing that goal line, you're going to do what you got to do to get him down. So, it's tough. Like Pat said, I think, you know, and I'm pretty sure this shows that we probably both are kind of old school. Those two days in the heat and those rigorous training camps, those Oklahoma drills, I think made us a little tougher than they do now when they just, you know, practice with no shoulder pads and go hat days a lot. I think it does have some credence to what is going on because I've seen those hits too, and guys have gotten up and, you know, clapped their hands and got back in the huddle, but guys are making it, you know, it looks worse than it used to.
All right. So, last part of the show, always the most fun part, top five list with Halloween now only about a week or two away, I guess. Let's do top five favorite candy bars. Top five favorite candy bars with Halloween approaching. It's all about the candy, of course. So who wants to go first or should I go first?
I'll go first today since I usually go last and my list is always the best. I'm just going to go first.
Okay, make we'll it, go first.
Yeah, make it be the first best. All right?
All right.
All right, here we go. I don't know if y'all – I had to Google it because I forgot the name of it, but my number five is the 100 grand bar.
Yes, I know that one well.
Remember that bar? Yeah. The
that's on my list. That's on my list.
And the red wrapper.
Got the pimples on the outside.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. The Carol, the 100 grand. My number four, and that's not a candy bar, but I'm going to put it in there anyway. I'm going to go with the good old-fashioned M&M's. I mean, I need an M&M.
That's not a candy bar.
Hey, man, but it's candy. It's chocolate. M&M's is my four. It's my
I'll give it to him. I'll give it to him. It's candy. Any part of candy. If it's a Reese's peanut butter cup, if it's a Twix bar, it all counts.
No doubt.
Oh, okay.
My number three is the good old Breakerman Ford, the Kit Kat. Can't go wrong with the Kit Kat. Okay. Good old milk chocolate with a crackle inside. You can break them in four. You know, you can play a little game. We're going to play tic-tac-toe, connect four. I'm going to go Kit Kat number three. My number two and number one was kind of a toss-up. All right? But I'm going to go number two. I'm going to go Snickers. You know, that's the apple pie of candy bars, the Snickers bar. I'm going to put that as my number two. Can't get wrong. You haven't gotten away for a while, have a Snickers bar. You've seen the commercials. Snickers my number two. My number one is Twix, man. You know, the two bars, you know,
two
you
left,
get a short now, you can get a long now. Twix is my number one candy bar, bar none.
That's a tough one. Well, you want me to go? I'll go. I'll rectify. I'll help his list a little bit. Because you got to get some old school candy bar. And I know this probably gonna shake it up a little bit. And I know a lot of people gonna be upset about this. And I think it's kind of the same thing. But my number five is gonna be the good old Heath bar. I'm going to say Heath. That's going to be my number five. You got to have Heath, toffee and chocolate. You never had a Heath bar?
Man, like Pyrene candy.
Like Pyrene candy, exactly. Being from New Orleans, exactly. Just like that. That's for the old school people who just sit on the back porch and have them a Heath bar. Some I probably up north your way, they might say score, but the score Heath, the same kind of thing. Number four, I'm going to go with Mr. Goodbar, the one in the yellow. Give you a little. Yeah, Mr. Goodbar. Yeah, good old yellow in the yellow wrapper. Mr. Goodbar. That's Mr. Goodbar. Put a little peanuts in there, Mr. Goodbar. Give you a switch up. Now we're going to go number three. Number three, I kind of like, you know, since we said anything counts, I'm going to go with Reese's peanut butter cups. Come on, man. You can't go wrong with chocolate and peanut butter mixed together. And you get two of them. You just know how you open it up and slide them out. You got to slide them out. Slide one. But, boy, you put them things in the refrigerator for later. You got yourself something. That's number three. Now, number two, I love a good Baby Ruth, but I'm going to have to agree with Pat. I'm going to say number two is Twix. Y'all get two left ones or two right ones, however they come. I'm going to take a good Twix. You know, got the cookie with the caramel and the chocolate. But no doubt, man, you can't deny. You're not yourself when you're hungry, man. You're just not yourself when you're hungry. Number one, it's got to be Snickers, man. It's got to be. You get a whole bunch of stuff in a Snickers, man. It fills you up, man. You feel good about yourself after you have a Snickers candy bar. Man, Snickers number one, without a doubt, hands down.
Okay. Good list. Both of them are good. Here's mine now. Number five, I also have the 100 grand. I love 100 grand. That is a good candy bar. That every time, if I see that out someplace with the little red wrapper, I'm there. Number four, Three Musketeers. Only because unlike some other ones, it's more light. There's not much. It's like that whipped chocolate inside that's really soft. Something a little different. I like the Three Musketeers. Number three.
Wherever you go, they're going to be Three Musketeers. They ain't going to be sold out Three Musketeers.
You're probably right about that. Okay, number three, I went with Baby Ruth. Baby Ruth, it's got so much stuff in it. When you take it out of the wrapper, it starts falling apart already sometimes. So I went with Baby Ruth there. Number two, I went with Butterfingers.
Oh.
Butterfingers got that peanut butter taste in there, too. It's got that crispy hard shell. there. And of course, number one, I'm with you, Aronde. Snickers is a granddaddy of them all. That's the candy bar of candy bars. So I got Snickers at number one.
All right, well.
Yeah, y'all can have y'all the Snickers. I'm going to go with them little Twix, though. I'm going with the
Twix
two
is
bars.
Good.
He's going with two left. Two left. Two left.
Like I said, it was a hard choice for me. I have Snickers as my two, but I'm just going off what I get the most. When I go to the gas station and I want something, a little snack, I'm going to get me a Twix. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying, though. You're hangry. You're not yourself, man. When you hungry and you need something, you got to get, man, to those Snickers, man. Especially Snickers. If you ever had Snickers ice cream. Oh, my God.
I have, actually. It's very good.
Snickerdoodle?
Snickerdoodles are good, too. Snickers has got a little family of all stuff. It's
they
very good. It's all good. Yeah, it's pretty good. So, guys, thanks so much for this week, for a few moments every time for this episode of Tailgate Talk. We'll talk to you next week. We'll see what happens with the Dolphins on the road against the Bills. Probably not that promising, but, hey, you never know. I'm thinking one of these weeks they're going to surprise us. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think one of these
weeks
will surprise
us. They will. And in the name of old Greg Camarillo, we're going to come out of this sooner or later.
Sooner or later. All right, guys, thanks so much. You guys have a good night.
All right, appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to Tailgate Talk with Pat and Aronde exclusively at DolphinsTalk.com. For all the latest Miami Dolphins news and information, be sure to check out DolphinsTalk.com and follow us on Twitter @DolphinsTalk.